99.3 Nigeria Info. Good morning to you, Lagos, wherever you are. Thank you for joining us. Those joining us in diaspora, thank you for always tuning. We appreciate you. If you don't have a mobile app yet, please go get it. You can get it from Google Play Store and Apple iOS Store. It's been lovely to know that you're there listening to us from all corners of the world. I'm Sheriff Quadri. It's the last hour of the Morning Crossfire for today, Wednesday. As promised, yes, we are here to talk about the BBC Africa Eye Black Axe documentary that has been trending on Nigeria's social media space for over 24 hours. Still a top trend on social media space in Nigeria here. And hey, we have the, what do we call it now? BBC journalist joining us right now. I almost called you a different name entirely. Peter, thank you so much for joining us. Very quickly, let me reel this out before we go into our conversation this morning. You can watch live on Facebook and on YouTube. Nigeria Info 99.3, that's right, Nigeria Info 99.3 on Facebook and on YouTube. And please, if you've seen that video and you'd like to share your experience or your thoughts or what you know, feel about the entire documentary or the reality of cultism. You know, last week we discussed cultism on this radio. We brought in an advocate, anti-cultism advocate, who shared his experience with us and what he's been doing. Now we're continuing with that advocacy on our call to end cultism in not just in our schools, but in the society at large. I have joining us right now the BBC journalist who did that documentary alongside his team, Bolaon Peter Machop. He joins us via Zoom this morning. Bolaon, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Good job on that documentary. Amazing job, I must say. I mean,
it
provoked another level of conversation entirely amongst Nigerians. But let's start this way. You came back after 20 years, from what I saw in that documentary. What prompted that?
So first of all, it's not like I've never been back to Nigeria. I do come very frequently. And so to answer your question, I had observed, you know, very carefully that this issue of cultism was a bit of a national emergency. I just didn't know why the reaction wasn't general in terms of the fact that I felt like this thing was like a cancer. It's beginning to fester. Because right. Everywhere you went, well, at least in my experience, whenever I go somewhere, you would hear comments like, oh, this person is Aye or is Aye, and comments like that. And in my memory, this was strictly in the university, at least when I was in school. Mm. It wasn't something that was on the streets. So you see the local vulcanizer or the carpenter or the Okada guy, you know, looking so threatening and things like that. And people be, oh, it's because he's Aye or he's Aye. Mm. And that's why he's like that. So I sort of noticed that there was a problem here. I was just wondering how long this was going to carry on for. Mm. But when the BBC received this cache of document from this private investigator, and then we sort of saw the enormity of this problem, the fact that it's actually traveled across the Atlantic, at least in the case of the Black Axe, they were literally in like 10 countries, and it gone further beyond the whole intimidating and stabbing people and things like that. It become like a crime syndicate. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it was important that this is news at this stage. This is something that needs to be done and done properly and accurately. And I think that's what triggered it.
Indeed. So how long did these documentaries take you to put together, really? And did you pay any price when putting this together?
I mean, for anything of this magnitude, you know, there is always some sort of price, if we put it that way, you know, time away from family, you know, nervous energy, hours of work and things like that. But obviously with an organization like the BBC, there is a lot of careful planning and things like that. So it took us about 2 years. First of all, we had to fact check the documents we had to be sure that, you know, it wasn't fictitious or like, you know, that it was believable. So we had to check to make sure that we were onto something here. As soon as we established that, we had to put a team together. And also we had to do like a thorough recce. So we made a couple of trips back and forth to Nigeria, try to find our contacts, you know, who do we speak to that can take us to who we need to meet, and how safe are these things, you know, is it worth it? You know, you weigh the risk versus the story, the public interest, you check the local media, what are people saying, what's happening, and then we made that decision, like, we need to go do this story. So 2 years in total to get it done.
Fantastic. Now, let's go into that documentary. I'm going to start, you know, the way you started the documentary, and that's about your friend, Dapo.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about him.
I mean, just now I had chills. Just you know, you saying that. So I'd had a lot of run-ins with cults.
Okay.
You know, I mean, as you can see from the video. Yeah. So growing up in Abeokuta, I always wanted to just make something of myself, be significant, you know, try to dress up, go to the gym, play basketball, you know, things like that. So when these groups of cults started to like kind of gather within the time I was in uni, I was approached a lot. I was approached, yeah. And I did consider, and friends of mine were in there, they tried to coerce me.
Yeah.
So it was something that I was never away from. It kept popping in my face. There would be subtle threats, then there would be endearment and things like that. But then I had friends of mine who were badly brutalized, either because they got caught up in a love triangle with a cultist, or they were living with one in a shared apartment and didn't realize it until there was a little argument, and then they had bottles smashed over their head. Mm. So I will see that now and again. You know, but in the case of Dapo, I mean, we grew up together in an area in Abeokuta. So I know him very well. We see each other grow from like primary school, high school, uni. And on this day, I remember coming down from the taxi. It's the place called the Yano Safari. You know, I come down, I see him sat on the bench with a Coke bottle. I'll never forget. He wore like a stripy Ralph Lauren t-shirt and a knickerbocker. And so he just sat there by the tree. There was a little nod of head. I went about my business. When I came back, it was like 3 hours later.
Yeah.
The whole place was dark. It was empty. And I saw a young man opposite crying desperately. So I crossed over like, what's wrong with you? And he led me to a spot. I didn't realize that a human being was lying there face down in a pool of blood, like massive. So I'd already stepped on Dapo's blood before I realized that there was a human being there, face down. Then the fact that I recognized him, like, oh my God, like, oh, you know, like when it hits you, like, oh,
yeah.
Somebody has just been killed.
Yeah.
It's somebody that I know. And this is the first time I'm seeing a dead person, by the way. I think I was, what, 23? So I literally, you know, like flight of fright. So I'm there for a second. I try to leave. I fall down. And I remember very, very well how... So, you know, how tearful I was as I was leaving, because there was a part of me that felt like the people that shot that wall were still hanging around and they were going to shoot me too. So as I ran, I was thinking about my parents. I was thinking about my siblings, how devastated they were going to be. And the fact that I'm not even in a cult and now this person is going to shoot me from the back. Any second from now, I'm going to drop and expire. And it upset me so much that I was crying. Even though I was running, I was crying. And after a while, I realized, okay, I guess I've not been shot. And yeah, so I had that was blood on my shoes for a couple of days. That's how harrowing it was. So when this project came and the bosses decided that this is news, we need to pursue it, I didn't realize that there was no proper closure. You know, because you forget this thing. And sometimes when I talk about it to friends, we laugh. They laugh about me crying. Like, I thought you're a hard man. How come you can? I'm like, yo, I cried. But when we went back to the spot, it hit me that, wow, it hit me. And then when I got to Dapo's graveyard and I saw it desolate, that was hurtful.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay because since this documentary came out, friends of ours who I reached out to when I started making this documentary, just to be sure that I was respectful about that was memory.
Yeah.
To say to them, you know, I'm doing this documentary and I wonder how much of that was story you remembered. Mm. And we were literally trying to find everyone.
Mm.
His baby brother, you know, I literally had to go to the village to find him. Mm. To say, I wanted to do this story and I'm going to be talking about your brother. And even his people within the family, some of them were against it. Like, mm. why now? Our brother has been dead 24 years. Mm. Why now? And who are you? How come I never met you? So there was a lot going on. Mm. Desperately trying to find that was photograph. Went to the school, his department of business admin. Like, this fellow, this happened. I'm trying to do a story to address the issues that took his life away. I wonder if I can find his photograph. Even his former girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of effort to just try to remember Dapo and try to be as respectful as we possibly can. So mm. they've reached out to me to say they saw the documentary.
Mm.
It upset them when the issue of Dapo came. Mm. But, you know, they're happy that we're at least able to remember him. And I dare say a group of friends came together mm. to fix Dapo's grave.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Let's dig deeper into the documentary. In the course of your investigation, you went to Ikorodu. You met the Onyagbo's vigilante group. It wasn't quite clear, though, in that documentary whether they had the backing of the state government in what they do. Because I saw the video, you even raised the concerns yourself as to how they treated those suspects in that documentary. Did you find out? Mm. Are you aware whether they have the backing of the government?
So backing, I wouldn't know. But they were not entirely rogue. So it's not something they do off their own back. I think there's some level of awareness from the authorities, because what, you know, with any content, it's not everything that makes it to the final cut.
That's right.
So we went out with the Onyabo multiple times, actually. So it wasn't just that raid. We went for another raid with them, and members of the police were actually involved.
Okay.
And, you know, this led us to some thick jungle in the middle of nowhere. I said, possibly we got to Sagam.
Hmm.
It was supposed to be like the outskirts of Ikorodu, but by the time we got to where we were going, we're in the middle of nowhere.
Hmm.
And, they, you know, it was like a kidnapping ring that they were trying to catch. And I think the story was like some of these Black Axe cultists do engage in kidnapping as well. Hmm. Except because we were not totally able to fact check that.
Yeah.
It's why we didn't run that, because we want everything to be factual.
Mm.
You see what I mean? But so that raid was in the company of the police, but it was the vigilante that had the information.
Okay.
You see? So I really don't know about how much support they have from the government, mm. but I do know that whenever they catch these cultists, they take them to the station. But one of the problems also with this thing is, once there is no allegations, you cannot prosecute.
That's right.
And with the level of fear in our society, people are afraid of reprisal attacks. So I think that's why whenever they catch these guys and no one's come to make any accusations,
mm.
They let them go. So mm. in the case of the bouncers and all that, yeah. I mean, I'm not quite sure what happened
to them,
but mm. I know they took them to the police.
Mm. At that point, still on Onyabo now, you followed them on a raid and you were running inside the forest. Weren't you scared?
So let me explain that bit. I thought my producer was quite clever there, because what we did was we found out very quickly that one of the Onyabo vigilantes was an aspiring camera person.
Okay, okay.
So every time we turn up with our drone and our equipment, he was quite keen,
mm.
you know, to mm. participate.
He was interested.
It would help us, like, try to, mm. yeah, it was try to help us put the tripod, set it up super quick. And, you know, you could see that it was quite nimble with it, you know. So we kind of asked him, if you when we go on this raid,
yeah,
would you handle one of these camera, if is that okay by you? And he literally took the opportunity. So that chasing,
yeah,
was by a vigilante. If you watch the documentary you would hear it chased by a vigilante. That's okay. Why he was shouting like stop there.
Yes.
So he was chasing him and filming him at the same time, which I thought was quite impressive.
Wow, that was quite brave.
But then I did some running myself, if I dare say. You know, I did do some running, albeit in my helmet and the body armor.
Right. Please stay on the line. We need to take a break right now. When we return from this break, we'll continue with our conversation. Lagos, Nigeria. You're welcome if you're just joining us. We're discussing the BBC Africa Eye documentary on the Black Axe secret cult. I'm Sherif Quadri. We're back in a moment.
This is Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Welcome back to the Morning Crossfire here on 99.3 Nigeria Info, the nation's number one talk station. Good morning to you if you're just tuning in. I'm Sherif Quadri. This morning we are taking a look at the BBC documentary on the Black Axe secret cult done by BBC journalist Bolan Peter Macjob. He joins us via Zoom this morning. Before I come back to Bolan, let me quickly take some reactions from you out there. Just take your thought on our conversation thus far. If you haven't seen the documentary, you can check out BBC Africa Eye YouTube channel. Just type BBC Africa Eye, then it will pop up. Then you can see that latest documentary on there. But before we get into to follow this conversation, let me hear from you. 0700 993 993 993 and 01465 7190. That is 01465 7190. We make this very short and straight to the point, so we can get back to our conversation on the documentary itself. All right, Nigeria Info, good morning to you. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, please.
Morning.
Good morning. What's your name?
My name is Patrick. I'm calling from Festa.
Go on, Patrick. Go on, quickly.
Yeah, I actually listened to him earlier when he was talking, and I could just relate.
How do you mean? Patrick? Oh, we can't hear Patrick. We're going to speak to James. James, hi. Morning to you.
Morning, Sherif.
Good morning. Morning
to you. First time caller, but an ardent listener to your program.
Good to have you. Good to have you.
Good. Thank you. And thank you for bringing, his name again?
Bolan.
To the program.
Bolan.
Okay, Bolan, yeah.
Yes.
See, I because of this interview this morning, I've been watching the program on the BBC Eye. In fact, it's so touching and very pathetic.
Right.
I stay in Ikorodu, but currently I'm in Lut.
Okay.
It is very obvious that what Bolan has done is just the truth. I've been in Ikorodu for 22 years. Every year there's a terrorism of all these guys, and we just hope that one of these days, this exposure is going to come out, and this is what is coming out to everybody now. Truly, people are fighting back, but you know, sometimes they come at a surprise attack. You don't know when they come.
Right, right.
And it has affected a lot of people. It has also affected them, people that are closer to us.
Right.
And I want to say a very big thank you to you, Sherif, and to Bolan as well. I don't know how to thank you a lot for this video I watched, and it really shows that there's trouble in this country.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to speak with Adebola very quickly before I talk to Bolan. Adebola, morning to you.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning to you.
I'm a first-time caller. I'm so surprised I got through today.
Good time.
Bolan, right?
Yes, Bolan, yes.
Bolan, hi. This is Bolan. We went to Bopoli together way back.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for calling.
Hello?
Yeah, he can hear
yes,
you.
Yes, I can
he
hear you.
Yeah, I could remember, because what really caught my attention in that story was Iyanna Safari, because I went to Bopoli, and I know Bolan very well.
Okay, okay.
I know the problem of the cults and
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
That was a problem we faced way back in school, and it was really bad then. For it now to have spilled into the streets now,
yeah,
something else.
It's something
then
else.
We used to choose was synonymous with school, with higher institutions.
Right.
But now you see vulcanizers, cat pushers.
Yeah.
Different kinds of people from different kinds of, backgrounds.
Right. Adebola, thank you for calling me. Appreciate it. I've got about 2-3 minutes to go on the show, so we need to conclude right now. But we will not go without going to Benin and what you uncovered there.
This is an infomercial.
In 2 minutes, Gbolahan, could you please tell us exactly what you uncovered there?
So I think what the first thing that jumps out with Benin is how rife cultism is, but more importantly, Black Axe is literally the haven. I remember vividly in our hotel where we stayed, there was a cult clash there. I was in my room. I heard the Axe Man. I literally, my heart jumped out into my mouth because literally they crossed each other. There was a problem. There was a lot of fighting. And I remember blocking my entrance door with my furniture, with the three-seater, the coffee table, the two-seater, because I was so afraid. So, and this was when we've just made contact with Stone. We didn't know whether he was going to receive us well or not. We hadn't gone to see Kabaka. So there was a lot of paranoia going on in the air. And you know, when they said to you, oh, we know you are already here.
Yeah.
You felt like, oh my God, they found us. Now they have come to kill us or something. Oh. Yeah, Benin was nerve-wracking. And then even the vigilantes in Benin, it was another level. It was like Onyabo, you know, like a Champions League version of Onyabo. It was, they were everybody walking around with pump action. You know, civilians walking around with firearms. I've never seen that many guns in my life.
Wow. Well, I'll thank you for the good work that you do. Thanks to the BBC for uncovering this. We have been on it for some time now here on Nigeria Info as well. We are particularly even concerned about how cultism has seeped into our primary schools, our secondary schools. It's a menace. It's an epidemic right now, the issue of cultism. But I thank you. Thank you for joining us on the show this morning.
Thank you so much.
There you go, Lagos. That's too much we can take. I really, really do hope that we could go further than that, but this is as much we have for you. But before I go, Mr. Brown is here. He's got some information for you. Then when he's done, I'll come back and wrap up the show. Mr. Brown, over to you.